Good Thursday, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming all around the world at thegamenashville.com and on the Game Nashville app. What's going on? Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Hope everyone is having a fantastic start to your day. Ryan, what's up?
What's up, Chaser? I woke up this morning thinking it was Friday.
Yeah, I did too, and I felt like Chase Elliott last night and had to let the world know they were number one. So that's exactly
he was letting certain individuals know that that they were number one.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I'll have a question on the NASCAR race for you specifically a little later on in the show. So
okay.
that's a tease, but midweek racing, give it to me. I am here for it. Had a lot of fun watching that one last night from Darlington, and Denny Hamlin gets the win. I've decided that I'm making it my mission. I want Denny Hamlin to come on either this show or the midday show because he's fun. He's fun to watch. He was on SVP last night. He golfs with Michael Jordan all the time. I just feel like that would be interesting.
Well, that would be very interesting. Denny Hamlin, very successful in the racing world. You know racing is back when the drivers are saluting each other with the number one.
Yeah, there was a fox on the track. I mean, it was,
and
it
they
was
were
wild.
they were debating this morning on Golic and Wingo whether or not there would be a fist fight even through all the social distancing and physically distancing if there would be a fist fight like we see every now and then in the NASCAR world. And Golic Jr. and Wingo all said that at some point this summer there will be a fist fight that crosses the physical distancing line.
Oh, I think there will be. Because last night, what you're alluding to, so in the closing laps, and they ended up cutting the race just a little bit short, about 20 laps short because of rain, Chase Elliott, who had a dominant car, looked like he was in a position to win, was going for the lead. And so you had Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch ahead of him, and he split the middle, had the run, had the spot, and Kyle Busch, to his own, he admitted this. He misjudged. He thought he had more room than he did, and he came down and he clipped Chase Elliott in the rear and wrecked him. Chase Elliott gets out of the car. He's not very happy. He lets Busch know that he's number one, and is just very, very upset. Goes to the hauler, and his crew chief Alan Gustafson, who actually used to be the crew chief of Kyle Busch earlier in his career, they show him when the cars come down pit road because of the rain. The rain had started, and they were hoping that they could not lose the track and they would be able to finish it out. Didn't happen. Alan Gustafson is sitting on pit wall just staring at Kyle Busch, and he's got one of his team members and then some of Kyle Busch's team, and I'm like, oh, it's going down. He's not happy. And they had a heated discussion, and there were some F-bombs dropped, but I guess they didn't work it out necessarily. Kyle Busch said, well, you know, I made a mistake, and I know I made a mistake, but it's not like I'm just going to magically fix it, and we're going to go have ice cream. I mean, they have every right to be upset. So that's kind of what started that. But I thought it could happen last night with the fireworks there at the Darlington Raceway. But Denny Hamlin ends up getting the win. And you move on to the Coke 600 at Charlotte this weekend. So I'm all about this midweek racing, especially when you have fireworks like that.
Sure, absolutely. Well, the more they compact these races together, I think the more you're going to see incidents like that where there is the one finger salute.
Absolutely. All right, so what we're going to do at 9:30 is we're going to have some fun, and we're going to need participation. So I'm going to go ahead and set the table for that. You've done that on Twitter with our quarantine question of the day. What is the worst stadium/arena experience that you have had as a fan? So I want you to let us know on the text line, 615-737-1025. You can respond to that tweet as well. But 615-737-1025 on the text line at 9:30. We're going to get hot and heavy into that. So put your thinking caps on. We have all had some bad experiences. And I'll just tease this. Ryan, you're going to want to pay attention to mine. You may be upset when I tell you the story. So,
okay.
You may be upset when I tell you the story. So, okay. We're going to do that at the bottom of the hour. So, weigh in on the text line. But our good friend Elliot Friedman, who is going to join Darren Donick and Chase later today at 1 o'clock, was the first to report last night. And we've seen different ideas out there and reports, but it is looking more and more likely that the NHL is going to return with a 24-team conference-based playoff. Nothing is set in stone. That is something that Elliot was very adamant about. Nothing is set in stone. The PA and the league could have more discussions as early as today on this, but the basic idea would be probably two-team hubs, not the four-team divisional hubs like we've heard about, but two 12-team conference hubs. They would all get together there. They would restart the season with this playoff format. They would have some play-in games with seeds 5 through 12, and you would have the other seeds getting that first round bye. So we both have read through this, Elliot's report. What do you think about this, Ryan, if this is in fact what they come back with?
Well, they're not playing games. They're playing series.
Series. Sorry.
So the 5 versus 12, 6 versus 11, 7 versus 10, and 8 versus 9, under this consideration, they would all be best of 5 series, and then after that round, it would become a best of 7 like normal. I guess the biggest takeaway I had from it was, you know, in the normal format, they reseed, or in past, when they've done 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, they reseed in the next round, and under this format, they would not. So let's say the 12 seed Chicago knocks off the 5 seed Edmonton, then Dallas, who is the 4 seed, would be the beneficiary of getting the 12 seed in the first round, and not St. Louis, who would be going in as the 1 seed. So I was a little confused by that, because I know the NHL has always reseeded, so I was interested to see that. And also,
and we wouldn't have the divisional seeding, the divisional matchups like we've had, right?
And I don't mind.
Yeah, I don't think anybody minds that. I mean, that has been a controversy since they put it in 2013.
You wouldn't be separating these teams in the one hub. I mean, they'd all be playing together. I don't mind that, going 1 through 12. There was no inclusion of a round robin in this. And that brings back the discussion that we had earlier this week when the round robin was reported over the weekend. These teams need at least some games before they play official playoff games. And we're both adamant about that. And hopefully with whatever plan the NHL lands on before the NHL and NHLPA agree on something that could be put into motion before the NHL is allowed to come back, I hope there's something in there that is of the like of a round robin. Because if you go from practices and a quasi-training camp right into the playoffs, you're asking for it.
Yeah, and I just wonder, and I mean, you're only going to have 24 teams. So, I mean, I guess you just have, if you have them in these two conference hubs, then just have everybody play some, I guess, exhibition games, which I'd rather them count for something, but you got to have something. You got to have them play.
Or you could mesh the two different, not proposals, but reports over the weekend. It was a round robin, and you mesh the points percentage from the regular season with the round robin. Maybe you can still do, you know, round robin games within your own division, like they were planning on within that previous report. You could do that and then mesh the points percentages of the regular season and the round robin, and then that determines all the seeding 5 through 12, 1 through 12, and they go forward with the 5 versus 12, 6 versus 11, and so on format.
Yeah, and we saw, and we've kind of said this too, that, you know, the NHL comes out, something leaks out with them, and then all of a sudden the NBA, something leaks out with them, and that continues to be what happens, that the NBA has kind of put out there that it could be towards the end of July when they get things going, that they hope to have basically something in place by June 1st. We've always heard end of July, sometime into August with the NHL. So it feels like things are matching up, and how crazy would it be? Because I saw, and again, this is all speculation, nothing set in stone, but I saw something that on Twitter that said that there is a chance that the NBA champion could be crowned in Vegas along with the Stanley Cup around the same time, that Vegas could be that spot where they do both of those. And that would be, I mean, that would be great for Vegas. That would be interesting, and we'd all watch.
Well, the NBA, the latest reports has been Disney World.
Yeah, I've seen that too. See, I've seen Vegas. I've seen Disney World. I mean, it's and this is why it's so important. We have to talk about this. We have to get. We want to give our opinions on this and speculate. But you also have to take it somewhat with a grain of salt because it's ever changing. Because these are meetings that are taking place, and we're not really supposed to find this information out. But there are a lot of people in media that are very good at their jobs, and they find this out. And so one day it could be, hey, let's do it at Disney World. They're willing to house us. Well, I talked to the people in Vegas. They want it too. And so you don't know which one is accurate and what has a better chance, but it's fun. It's fun. It gives us something to talk about. But I will say that reading Elliot's report, and we know, of course, we'll have him at 1 o'clock today on Darren Donick and Chase. We'll ask him more about this. But I'm starting to. I mean, does it feel like we're about to have a resolution, or has it? Or do you feel the same?
I mean, I don't know if we're going to have a resolution until June. And when I mean a resolution of, then we hear the dates that are being thrown out there of, let's start a round robin on this date, and let's start, you know, the postseason on that date. I think it's going to take until June to get all that. But I wouldn't be surprised during the next few days if the NHL and NHLPA like this format or another one that is being discussed. Would not be surprised here in the next few days if we do hear that they've landed on a format at least to come back, and, you know, obviously it's got to be healthy enough for them to do so.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if that happens in the next few days.
Are you cool with this format if this is what they do?
I don't love it, but it's better than no hockey.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it too. I mean, it's not perfect. It's not going to be perfect, but if it's the best they can come up with and the product is good, then that's what they have to do.
I mean, I've been vocal about wanting it to be 20 teams and not 24, but if this means we get hockey back this summer, then sign me up.
You will take it. Interesting comments out of a Titans wide receiver. You will hear that next here on the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Do you own or manage a small business? Are you open and want to let people know about that? Then Free Business Friday on ESPN 102.5 The Game is for you. This Friday, we're offering free advertising to local businesses that are safely open and working. This is a no-cost, no-catch offer. Visit thegamenashville.com/FBF for more information. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. From your friends at ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on the Rundown, Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, and the face that runs the place, Marquise Munson, back at the Game Nashville Studios, Wholesale Inc. Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. So, Ryan, yes, you know, we've been having press conferences. The show has not stopped when it comes to sports and players. You know, this is the off season, so a lot of times the Titans will serve up players and the media go out and ask their questions. Well, it's been different. They've been on Zoom. And that was the case again yesterday with a couple of Titans players. Jeffrey Simmons was one of them. A.J. Brown, the breakout rookie wide receiver last season, was the other. Going into his second year, he talked about some of his expectations for himself, how he's been working out. But then he was asked the question if he saw a difference in his play in the playoffs. His answer kind of perked my ears up a little bit.
To be honest, it was definitely things that happened in those playoff games that I could have did better. But to be honest, man, that's just a credit to Derrick Henry. He was locked in. He was in the zone. And we kept feeding him the ball. And it was working. So, like I said, that goes back into what he was doing, you know, most definitely. But things I could have did better in certain situations, you know, so. Yeah.
AJ Brown on his performance in the playoffs. Okay, you hear that, and what comes to your mind, Ryan?
Well, you know, he does mention that there were things that he could have done better, and it came across to me as him basically saying Derrick Henry got the ball all the time. He was doing great. And that's the reason why my numbers dropped off. Well, yes, that is true. I think there were definitely some moments in those games where AJ Brown needs to learn from. You know, going up against Stephon Gilmore in New England, going up against Marlon Humphrey in Baltimore. Those are two elite cornerbacks in this league, and he didn't produce results. Now, the Titans didn't throw the ball as much. You know, Ryan Tannehill completed 8 passes in New England, I think only 7 in Baltimore. But even in New England, A.J. Brown, of the 15 passes that Tannehill threw, A.J. Brown only had 1 target. In Baltimore, of the 14 passes that Ryan Tannehill threw, he only had 3 targets. The Kansas City game where Tannehill threw the ball more, A.J. Brown had about what he averaged throughout the season with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback, which was just around 6 targets per game. He only had 3 catches in that game. But, you know, I love what I heard out of A.J. Brown and have heard out of A.J. Brown ever since the season ended, and that's the fact that he didn't feel like his production in his rookie year was good enough. You know, I kind of wish he would have gone into a little bit more detail of why he feels like those playoff games weren't as productive, other than just kind of glossing over there are things that I could have done better, but Derrick Henry got the ball, and that's the reason why I didn't get the ball. Say what?
That's not what I want to hear out of my star wide receiver. And I know that if you sit him down and you question him on that, he's going to realize that he probably didn't mean it that way. He didn't mean it how it came out and how you and I might be perceiving it. But no, just you have things you need to work on. I understand that, but don't say, well, they were giving Derek the ball more, so I didn't get as many chances. You don't need to say that, even if it's somewhat true. It's going to come off wrong if you say it that way.
Sure.
That's my thing, and that's what I think you're saying too. Because, yeah, I mean, Derrick Henry had 34 attempts against New England, 30 against Baltimore, 19 against Kansas City.
Okay. And that was the right game plan, especially New England and Baltimore, when Derrick Henry was rolling. If Arthur Smith had broken away from the run, then that would have been coaching malpractice on his part, because Derrick Henry just was an unstoppable force in those games.
Sure, sure.
So at the same time, elite receivers get the ball at some point, you know? Like, it's Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, Antonio Brown before he went AWOL. Like, they get the ball no matter what the game plan is. And if A.J. Brown wants to be a bona fide number one moving forward, and not just be the Titans' number one, but be considered a number one league-wide, then he needs to have a lot more separation and continue to do all the great things, which is when he gets the ball, he almost turns into a running back. Mm-hmm. And he's a force when he gets the ball in his hands. But in big moments like that against the top corners, I want to see him produce more than he did against the Patriots and the Ravens.
I will always go back with when I'm looking at areas where A.J. Brown needs to improve, I'm always going to go back to the game against New Orleans. He was targeted twice. He had 1 reception for 34 yards. He was basically taken out of it. And what does New Orleans have? They have shutdown corners. I mean, they have a stud defense, but they have shutdown corners. And I'm not saying that that's not going to improve, because I sat there next to him at his locker in locker cleanout day, and he addressed that. He knows that those are some things that he needs to work on. But when you have those really good teams with those good cornerbacks that are taking the star receiver out of the game, I mean, that's obviously something that the receiver needs to work on. Sometimes sure. It's just a part of the game plan, and it just doesn't work out. But I will always look at that. He was only targeted twice, and that's a credit to New Orleans. New Orleans knew that they had to key in on number 11, and they did a good job of it. And you have to wonder that now Derrick Henry's not playing in that game. So they, if Derrick Henry's in the game, what does it look like? if A.J. Brown gets a couple more catches, what does it look like? Because I think we all praise the Titans. Okay, they lost by 10 points, but they didn't play all that bad considering that their star running back was not in the lineup. So a lot of different factors, but that's the example that I'm using, that when he's going up against those types of corners, then that's just where he's got to grow as a receiver.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree. I think that's the point we're both making here. And you brought up a great example with Marshawn Lattimore in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So look, if he wants to be a number one, some number one receivers have those games against the elite corners where the elite corner had their number, but they also have games where they have the elite corner's number. And that is what I want to see out of A.J. Brown. He talked about, you know, ad nauseum yesterday about how he wants to take the next step in 2020 and certain things that he feels like he needs to do better. One of the things that he needs to do better is, you know, really prove himself as a number one against the elite corners.
Bill Barnwell came out with an article that they've been releasing pieces of it over the last few days, ranking all 32 teams based on their offseason and what they did in the offseason. The Tennessee Titans are 25th out of 32 teams. And I saw that, and I saw this the other day, and then you brought it up this morning when we were texting, talking about the show, and I said, okay, let's see how we both feel about this, because I feel like that this ties into the conversation that we've had a lot of when you look at this roster, can you really say that they've gotten better at positions? We did the exercise yesterday of going through, you know, position by position, and we didn't really say they got better. We said slightly worse or the same for a lot of those positions. And so when I see a 25th place ranking for the Titans in the offseason, I don't really disagree with it. That seems about right. Now, with all that said, because anybody that we've brought this subject matter up to, they all say, ask me again, you know, halfway through the season, or because this the way this roster is constructed, the hope is you're going to see some of these pieces get better as the year goes on. And I know that that's obviously what you want out of any team, but the way it's set up, Isaiah Wilson, does he take over at the right tackle? Does he, you know, take that and run with it and be the starter there and make that offensive line better? The hope is yes. Jeffrey Simmons, does he have a breakout season? The hope is yes. So there are a lot of different examples of that, but Bill Barnwell in his article says that they had to do what they had to do with Tannehill and Derrick Henry, but with the money that they gave Tannehill, that worries him a little bit. And I understand that. That was a concern for everyone.
Well, here's the hot take from Bill Barnwell in this article. He says, and he has it broken up into different sections for each team. The different sections are what went right, what went wrong, what could they have done differently, and what's left to do. And under the what they could have done differently, Bill Barnwell writes, I'm not sure the Titans had much of a choice, but even limiting the Tannehill deal to two guaranteed seasons would have been a much better deal. With hindsight, it's fair to suggest they might have been better off letting Tannehill hit the market and going after somebody like Nick Foles or Andy Dalton at a much cheaper price. Dude, Bill Barnwell.
I completely disagree.
Like,
with that.
What are you talking about? If letting Tannehill walk for Nick Foles or Andy Dalton? Are you kidding me?
If they had done that, John Robinson would have been thrown in the Cumberland River. Like, there's no doubt. There would have been no self-quarantining. He would have been thrown in the river if he had done that. That's not happening. And I saw that and had the same reaction you did. Like, Foles or Dalton? Both are, I mean, I guess Foles is competing for a starting position. Dalton's a backup now.
Like, Bill Barnwell is a really good writer, and I respect a lot of the things that he puts out at ESPN.com. But when he says something like that, it comes across as someone who didn't watch Tannehill every game.
Yeah. That didn't watch the team.
He knows the Ryan Tannehill backstory and the fact that he struggled most of the time in Miami, and then he comes to Tennessee, and it comes across as Bill Barnwell thinking it was a fluke. And maybe it was. But to suggest that you're going to let Tannehill walk after the 13-game stretch that he had in a Titans uniform and let him walk, and then you roll the dice on Nick Foles, who has perennially sucked outside of Philadelphia, or Andy Dalton, who is the league average quarterback. I was just scratching my head over that.
Yeah, because up until that point in the blurb, I was like, all right, you know, this is he's spot on right now that, okay, Jack Conklin leaves. That's obviously a big loss. Logan Ryan leaves. That's a big loss. You're replacing them with the combination of Dennis Kelly, Isaiah Wilson, Jonathan Joseph. You brought in Vic Beasley on a one-year prove-it deal. So everything to that point I was agreeing with. Like, this is stuff we've been talking about. Okay, a lot of question marks with that. It could work, may not work. Who knows? The only way we're going to find out is when they start playing games. Then he gets to that part of they could have just let Tannehill go to bring in Nick Foles and Andy Dalton. And, you know, that I just no way. But that takes your – even though Derrick Henry is the catalyst of this offense, if you have one of those guys, it drops off a lot, in my opinion.
Oh, totally. Think of how we're thinking about the Titans going into 2020 if J-Rob had let Tannehill walk and they signed Andy Dalton. Or
yeah,
Dalton wasn't even a free agent at that time. Or if they had ended up with a worse free agent, maybe like a Teddy Bridgewater, or they gave up something for Andy Dalton when they could have just waited to sign him after the draft. Or
I said
given
sign
up
him as the backup.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, it just blew my mind that Bill Barnwell put that in his story.
Yeah,
it just blew my mind.
You can check that out at ESPN.com. His article there, and he, like I said, he ranks all 32 teams in the order of how he perceives them having their offseason, how their offseasons went. So not necessarily grades, but I thought it was interesting, but that's where I just completely lost. He completely lost me on that. So the 32nd team, though, in the AFC South, the Houston Texans. No surprise there.
The 32nd team in the NFL.
In the NFL, but I mean from the AFC South, sure. The Houston Texans are ranked 32nd. So there you go, ESPN.com. You can check that out. When we come back, we told you about this at the top of the show. We need your participation. We're going to have some fun. 615-737-1025. Let's try this again. 615-737-1025 on our text line. It's good to finish one sentence before going to the other. Weigh in your worst stadium or arena experience. We want to hear from you. Let's have a little fun when we come back on the Rundown. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Help us decide who you think has the best football jersey in our uniform drawing contest. The winner will receive a Vandy jersey courtesy of Vanderbilt Athletics. You can vote at the 102.5 The Game Twitter page or the Game Nashville Facebook page. Cast your vote now. A lot of great submissions in our uniform drawing contest, so we have had some fun with that. Welcome back into the Rundown. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson with you, asking our question of the day, your worst stadium or arena experience ever. And before we get to a call that we have, Marquise, I know you wanted to share one.
Yeah, so it's not really like I never had bad, like, all around experiences. I just had like moments to where it's just like it gets annoying. So when I was in college, I went to Alabama, obviously, and I went to the Tennessee-Alabama game, and this was the year Derrick Henry won the Heisman. So it was like, you know, Dobbs was quarterback, and it was a pretty big game. So usually when you go to sit in the student section, there's always these kids that, like, show up early, and they, like, sit in a whole row and just try to, like, block the whole row off for their friends. And those were, like, some of my worst experiences, just having to deal with those idiots who would be like, well, I'm going to the game early, so I'm going to save, like, you know, 14 seats on this row for all my friends. Like, that's not happening. So, and that game was so packed, I had to end up, like, watching the game from the steps because it was just so packed. And I didn't want to be angry, you know, college kid that, you know, hems up kids with polos and khaki shorts. So I just was like, yo, whatever, man, have your seat, whatever. So yeah, that was bad. But I had fun at that game, though, because I was still able to drink and watch Alabama win and watch Derrick Henry break that big run, that Heisman run that he had. Yeah, got to watch that. So it was good.
There you go.
But still sucked, though, because I was like, man, I got to watch it from the steps.
It happens. But there you go. All right. So worst stadium experiences. Let's go to Ricky. Ricky wants to weigh in. Welcome into the rundown.
Hey, Chase. How are you, buddy?
Doing well.
Good. Real fast before I tell my story, rest in peace to Shad Gaspard, man. WWE Crime Times. What a shame.
Yeah, that was a sad story.
Sad. My story was in the Wells Fargo Arena in Philadelphia, 9/17/11. It was right after 9/11. My 17-month-old daughter and I took a ride down to get out of the house about a week after, and we went down, and as you walk in, they paint your face with American flags, and they were giving all the kids little American flags, and there's my daughter in a Matthew Barnaby New York Ranger jersey, and right before the intermission of the first period, they put the Jumbotron on my daughter, and I'm holding her up, and she's blonde hair, blue eyes, pigtail, holding an American flag, and the next thing I know, she's hit in the head with two pretzels, and there's beer poured all over my one-and-a-half-year-old in Philadelphia.
Good
because
grief.
Watching on the Jumbotron, she was wearing a Ranger jersey.
Oh, my
gosh.
But
let's just say the fans of Philadelphia are just, as usual, the least classy in the whole NHL or NFL, and that's definitely my worst story ever.
Yeah, that's bad. Come on. Don't pick on the kids. Mm. Like, that's just ridiculous.
That's brutal, especially a week after what had just happened in New York. Like, that's...
Yeah. That's not cool.
That's cold-hearted.
I know that some people have tweeted in, so you got some tweets?
Well, we have a lot of tweets that involve beer being dumped on.
It seems to be a theme.
It does. It was a theme with you. Beer was a theme of ours, or mine, I should say, for Ricky as well. You know, it's funny. Vanderbilt football is actually getting a lot of tweets, but we got one from Mark Mariani, played for the Titans, and he says Qualcomm is the number one worst stadium experience he's ever had, I guess, as a player. And we've had some others.
San Diego, right?
Yeah, San Diego, and some others have chimed in saying the old Jack Murphy Stadium, which then turned into Qualcomm, was awful. So not a whole lot of love for the former Padres and Chargers stadium out there in San Diego. Someone saying Dodger Stadium, Nick on Twitter saying Dodger Stadium was by far the worst. Been to 15 ballparks. Concession lines were terrible. Tiny concourses. Bathrooms didn't exist. That would suck. But the worst was getting to and from the stadium just ruined the entire experience before even getting to the ball game. I've never been to Dodger Stadium, but I've heard that Dodger Stadium, there's only like one or two ways in and out, and you're kind of going through a neighborhood to get there.
That's what I've heard too.
Yeah, so not
I'll let you know in a
Dodger
week and
Stadium.
A half when I go. Oh wait, had to cancel.
Man, this weekend we were going to be in Cincinnati.
I know this. I had baseball was going to be all around me the next couple weeks because your bachelor party in Cincinnati. So we're going to see the Reds and the Padres, and then I was headed to L.A. to see the Padres play and the Dodgers and the Angels, but unfortunately, not going to happen. And unfortunately, Ryan, we're out of time, so keep those stories coming at Twitter and our text line, and we will read some of those later on. But that's going to do it for the rundown. For Ryan Porth, I am Chase McCabe and Marquise Munson. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 9 a.m. Help us decide who you think has the best football jersey in our uniform drawing contest. The winner will receive a Vandy jersey courtesy of Vanderbilt Athletics. You can vote at the 102.5 The Game Twitter page or The Game Nashville Facebook page. Cast your vote now. A lot of great submissions in our uniform drawing contest, so we have had some fun with that. Welcome back into the rundown. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson with you. Asking our question of the day, your worst stadium or arena experience ever. And before we get to a call that we have, Marquise, I know you wanted to share one.
Yeah, so it's not really like I never had bad, like, all around experiences. I just had like moments to where it's just like it gets annoying. So when I was in college, I went to Alabama, obviously, and I went to the Tennessee-Alabama game. And this was the year Derrick Henry won the Heisman. So it was like, you know, Dobbs was quarterback, and it was a pretty big game. So usually when you go to sit in the student section, there's always these kids that like show up early and they like sit in a whole row and just try to like block the whole row off for their friends. And those were like some of my worst experiences, just having to deal with those idiots who would be like, well, I'm going to the game early, so I'm going to save like you know, 14 seats on this row for all my friends. Like, that's not happening. So, and that game was so packed, I had to end up, like, watching the game from the steps because it was just so packed. And I didn't want to be angry, you know, college kid that, you know, hems up kids with polos and khaki shorts. So I just was like, yo, whatever, man, have your seat, whatever. So, yeah, that was bad. But I had fun at that game, though, because I was still able to drink and watch Alabama win. And watch Derrick Henry break that big run, that Heisman run that he had. Yeah, got to watch that. So it was good.
There you go.
But still sucked, though, because I was like, man, I got to watch it from the steps.
It happens. But there you go. All right, so worst stadium experiences. Let's go to Ricky. Ricky wants to weigh in. Welcome into the rundown.
Hey, Chase. How are you, buddy?
Doing well.
Good. Real fast before I tell my story, rest in peace to Shad Gaspard, man, WWE Crime Times. What a shame.
Yeah, that was a sad story.
Sad. My story was in the Wells Fargo Arena in Philadelphia, 9/17/11. It was right after, I'm sorry, 9/17/2001, right after 9/11. My 17-month-old daughter and I took a ride down to get out of the house about a week after, and we went down, and as you walk in, they paint your face with American flags, and they were giving all the kids little American flags. And there's my daughter in a Matthew Barnaby New York Ranger jersey, and right before the intermission of the first period, they put the Jumbotron on my daughter, and I'm holding her up, and she's blonde hair, blue eyes, pigtail, holding an American flag. And the next thing I know, she's hit in the head with two pretzels, and there's beer poured all over my one-and-a-half-year-old in Philadelphia.
Good
because
grief.
Watching on the Jumbotron, she was wearing a Ranger jersey.
Oh,
my
gosh.
But let's just say the fans of Philadelphia are just, as usual, the least classy in the whole NHL or NFL, and that's definitely my worst story ever.
Yeah, that's bad. Come on. Don't pick on the kids. Like, that's just ridiculous.
That's brutal, especially a week after what had just happened in New York. Like, that's...
Yeah, that's not cool.
That's, yeah, that's cold-hearted.
I know that some people have tweeted in, so you got some tweets?
Well, we have a lot of tweets that involve beer being dumped on.
It seems to be a theme.
It does. It was a theme with you. Beer was a theme of ours, or mine, I should say. For Ricky as well. You know, it's funny. Vanderbilt football is actually getting a lot of tweets, but we got one from Mark Mariani, played for the Titans, and he says Qualcomm is the number one worst stadium experience he's ever had, I guess, as a player, and we've had some others.
San Diego, right?
Yeah, San Diego, and some others have chimed in saying the old Jack Murphy Stadium, which then turned into Qualcomm, was awful. So not a whole lot of love for the former Padres and Chargers stadium out there in San Diego. Someone saying Dodger Stadium, Nick on Twitter saying Dodger Stadium was by far the worst. Been to 15 ballparks. Concession lines were terrible. Tiny concourses. Bathrooms didn't exist. That would suck. But the worst was getting to and from the stadium just ruined the entire experience before even getting to the ball game. I've never been to Dodger Stadium, but I've heard that Dodger Stadium, there's only like one or two ways in and out, and you're kind of going through a neighborhood to get there.
That's what I've heard too.
Yeah, so not
I'll
surprised
let you know in a
Dodger
week and
Stadium.
A half when I go. Oh wait, I had to cancel.
Man, this weekend we were going to be in Cincinnati.
I know this. I had baseball was going to be all around me the next couple of weeks because your bachelor party in Cincinnati, so we're going to see the Reds and the Padres, and then I was headed to LA to see the Padres play and the Dodgers and the Angels, but unfortunately not going to happen. And unfortunately, Ryan, we're out of time, so keep those stories coming at Twitter and our text line, and we will read some of those later on. But that's going to do it for the rundown. For Ryan Porth, I am Chase McCabe and Marquise Munson. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 9 a.m.